Betrayers, I want to remind you of the unavoidable fate of a ninja traitor. You must commit harikiri for your transgression.
Born a ninja, die a ninja.
Motivated by ninja spirit. When we take up a mission, we must succeed or die. Our techniques are dominant and unbeatable. Our style is unique and hypnotically elegant. If you don't want to suffer under the wrath of the ninjas, then give back our golden ninja warrior. I'm the Ninja Terminator.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Nextlander Watchcast. Folks, if you have watched this movie and you are back for the Watchcast, that means you are in it for this podcast for the long haul. We can't get rid of you no matter how hard we try, because ninjas have penetrated the Nextlander, haven't they, Brad Shoemaker and Vinny Caravella?
Brad, you start.
We're speechless.
Yeah.
The only phrase that I came in here with in my head is glorious trash.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't really know how to form that into a coherent sentence.
Alex, that's my ninja star.
Why did you do that?
Brad, that's my ninja star.
That part's pretty good.
Folks, Ninjasploitation is on the menu this month for the month of November. We are doing a turkey month, some gloriously bad films. Films that I have a great deal of appreciation for, despite the fact that they are not of, let's just say, the best ilk. I think I prefaced this last time, or I said at the end of the podcast, I was a big fan growing up of Mystery Science Theater 3000, specifically their Turkey Day marathons around Comedy Central around Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. You probably told us at some point that I forgot that this was a Mystery Science Theater thing.
Well, that was. These movies are not. There have been riff tracks. No, this was not on Mystery Science Theater officially.
Okay. If you were to tell me, as I thought you were just about to tell me, that this was something they did on Mystery Science Theater, I'd totally believe you.
To my recollection, the only Z-grade ninja stuff they did on Mystery Science Theater were a couple of hastily edited together movies that were based on a short-lived network TV series called The Master that starred Lee Van Cleef and Sho Kasugi, where it was basically a Incredible Hulk-style renegade ninja master and his white bread dipshit apprentice run around the country solving people's problems while also trying to solve some sort of ninja mystery. We are not doing that series or those movies here. We are going even further down the rung. We are going to the depths of ninja hell. And for this week, we are plucking out one of the many, many, many ninja films made by, I'm going to call him the great, you can feel free to disagree, Godfrey Ho.
I don't know the history here, which is great because you can fill me in on all of this.
There's so much to get to and so much to say. I almost kind of want to check in with you guys and see if you have any up top questions you want to ask before we go here.
Dude, it's all questions all the way down. I will say one of the movies that we're going to watch, I did see on a Riff Tracks video once. While not Mystery Science Theater, pretty similar stuff.
Miami Connection was done by Riff Tracks Live, so there is a version of that out there if you want to check it out. I think Riff Tracks might have done Ninja Terminator at some point, too. So
I did not see that there. After I had watched this movie, I tried to rewatch some of it also before we did this podcast because I was a little lost on the plot. And I was talking to you, Alex, and this made me laugh because I said, oh, is this the one you were talking about where they lost all the audio and just kind of had to make it up and do all that stuff? And then you were like, no, that's not this one.
No.
And then I was like, oh.
That's next week. So that's New York Ninja.
Okay, because that would have made a lot more sense as I was watching this. To be like, oh, they probably didn't know what they were saying, so they just made up things.
I'll tell you right now, some of the people involved in this film definitely did not know what was being put into their mouths. We'll get to that in a second, but okay, before we launch into the insane biography and filmography of Godfrey Ho, I want to briefly touch on why we are doing these films and why I have any affection for them at all, which is to say, I grew up in the 80s, as we all did, and I'm sure all of you remember the ridiculous ninja boom of the 80s, all the movies and cartoons and video games and what have you of various ninja things. It was one of the most exploitable things that was out there for cheesy action cinema.
Ninja Gaiden, the first one for NES, is like among the most hyped I have ever been for anything in my life.
It's funny you should mention that, because that's the thing that got me on the ninja train was Ninja Gaiden, and specifically its feature in Nintendo Power ahead of its release here in the US. That got me going.
Nintendo Power doing its job, selling video games.
I am not ashamed to admit, though maybe I should be, after I watched this movie, I Googled, are ninjas real? Just because after this movie, it called everything into question. I had to really just double check what the current state of historically accurate ninjas are, because this movie really, really is chewing up a lot of probably pop culture, making stuff up.
Oh, yeah. Okay, what did you find, Vinny?
You know, it's probably about what you think it was, like the kind of shinobi and that style of espionage and assassin was a thing. The kind of, I don't know if this is Western or what, the kind of classical depiction in movies, not so much.
So you're saying there's no real ninja empire out there?
You know, this is what I did find. I think the last person who can lay claim to like a ninjutsu heritage said they will not pass,
Lee Van Cleef.
That pass on that knowledge to any successor. And this is what I found on Wikipedia. Please take that with a grain of salt. But said he's a academic and is a curator of a museum, and said will not pass that knowledge on. And the line ends here.
Okay.
So well, the last ninja, which I'm sure is a movie also.
That said, they are still going to make ninja movies until the heat death of the universe. So to bring it all around to another podcast we recorded earlier today, they will never stop because they are the easiest thing in the world to dress a bunch of cheap stuntmen up in and choreograph the shittiest fights you've ever seen in your life.
Well, you know, that's... The fights in this there are some martial arts skill in this.
Okay.
That's like probably the most actually competent thing in this is there are some amazing roundhouse kicks in this.
Well, okay, they're pretty far apart and they don't actually connect, but
yeah.
There's some complication around that, which I will explain as we go here, as far as like who can lay claim to those kicks. But all right, let's get into this in earnest. Let's start with a little bit of a history lesson here. Godfrey Ho.
Okay.
Obviously, you guys had never heard of him before, correct?
The name sounds very familiar. I can't claim to know a damn thing about him, but I may have like seen that name go around at some point.
Okay. You may have mentioned Godfrey Ho before,
probably what it was.
Or I'm just doing my thing where my brain is like doing like Gilbert Gottfried Ho, in my head, and that's just Godfrey is not a name you hear a lot.
Well, unfortunately, Gilbert Godfrey Ho is not one of the many aliases that he has used as a director over his estimated to be around 170 films in his filmography, a solid 80 of which were made in the decade of the 80s.
That's
it's a lot of movies, and you'll find out why. But some of his other aliases include, I'm just going to name a bunch of them because I wrote a whole bunch of them down here. Godfrey Hall, Wallace Chan, Alton Chung, Benny Ho, Ho Chi Mo, Chi Chiang Ho, Charles Lee, Albert Yu, Herbert Lam, Ted King, Bruce Lambert, Oliver Wimper, Edgar Gere, Philip Frazier, George Hurst, Robert Lamb, Victor Sears, Bob Chan, Joel Law, Anthony Pa, Tim Ashby, Ralph Fillmore, Joe Livingston, Burt Peterson, Ted Kingsbrook, Stanley Chan, Ho Fong, Ho Jung Kyung, God Ho Young, and my favorite, Ed Wu. Those are our mysterious benefactors for this month.
Yeah, right.
It's like
a
tax dodge kind of situation or something.
Well, let's start with where he started. Godfrey Ho is trained in film production. He started out with the Shaw Brothers, as a lot of other filmmakers from this era did. He was working as assistant director for them in the 1970s, and he started directing in the 70s. But somewhere along the way, he got hooked up with this producer, Joseph Lai, who is the name you see splattered across this movie at the beginning. And he and Lai... Okay, how do I say this kindly? I have nothing but respect for true scam kings. I think if you can pull off a real good scam and it's not technically illegal, I have nothing but respect for that. I mean, again, it's my Carney roots. Uh-huh. I have a certain amount of respect for that sort of thing. So over the course of the 1980s, Godfrey Ho, as I said, directed numerous films, most of which featured the word ninja and later eventually featured the word kickboxer. And a lot of them were starring our chief white guy in this film, Richard Harrison. Now, the key kink in all of this is that Richard Harrison only signed on to do a handful of films for Godfrey Ho and Joseph Lai. I think he was signed up to like 3 movies. He ended up top billing and starring, quote unquote, in about 30 to 40, something like that, of them. The reason for this is because Godfrey would take the footage that he shot with Richard Harrison and various other players. He would then cut it up in different ways to fit whatever plot they decided to write. And then they would fill in the margins with footage from other movies.
Wait, it's like a Mad Libs of movies?
Yes.
Can you do that?
Can you
do
that?
If you own the rights, you can.
So
this film in particular, you may have noticed that there is a long section of it that features our character Jaguar.
Jaguar. Actually, it's funny to hear you hear both of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I assume depending on what kind of roots you have, whether in Britain / Hong Kong or America.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Jaguar, you may have also noticed, never actually appears with Richard Harrison or any of the ninjas.
Oh, yeah.
They have very poorly filmed phone calls.
They do talk to each other on the phone. It never actually occurred to me they never actually see each other.
That footage, everything involving that character and that whole storyline, the guy in the blonde wig with the dapper suit, all that shit, is from a 1984 Korean film, The Uninvited Guest of the Star Fairy.
What? Wait, so how did Ho come into possession of the rights to the Korean film?
Joseph Lai owned the international distribution rights for that film.
Huh.
So, this is not the only movie to suffer this fate at the hands of Ho and Lai. I don't have a full list of all of them, but basically every single one of these ninja films that he made over the years boils down to some new footage mixed in with footage from other movies and then dubbed over entirely to fit whatever script they decided to cobble together to make the movie.
Glorious trash.
Yeah.
That's all I can say.
Sure. I'm trying to think. Like, yeah, I'm going through the whole movie in my head now. Like, Jaguar just kind of appears out of nowhere walking down the street at some point.
Yes.
And calls Harry. And then Jaguar goes on a whole side story with Lily and the other kidnapped sister. And then, yeah, you're right. It just is a self-contained other little thread.
It is unsurprisingly different. A very disjointed movie.
Yes, it is. And I remember watching it the first time thinking, like, this is like 2 different movies happening at once. And turns out I was right.
Clearly now by necessity, now that we know how this was made, but like, other than references and dialogue, like, parts of the plot just vanish for most of the movie, you know?
Yep.
Like Including Jaguar.
Mm-hmm. Like the whole golden statue thing and all that stuff, other than, again, being referenced in dialogue that's easily dubbed onto other footage.
Yep.
Is just completely absent from the movie until the last 5 minutes.
Yep. What plot there is complete nonsense, and it is entirely constructed just to get that footage to fit together, as, you know, ungainly as it may be, to fit together into something that looks like a movie.
So what, is there any original footage under the Ninja Terminator production, or is it all combined footage?
My understanding is that all the stuff with Richard Harrison in this one was specifically built around this movie, though I think some of the footage from this movie may appear in other ones. But all the stuff with him in his camo ninja outfit, which is, I'm going to say right now, is somehow not even the most ridiculous ninja outfit that Godfrey Ho puts him in. There's another one where he is in a straight up bright yellow ninja outfit with a red bandana that literally says the word ninja on it.
Great.
Because how else would you know?
You wouldn't. Who could know?
But so that stuff, the stuff with the fucking robot and him and the Garfield phone, like all that shit is for this movie.
It is.
But everything else that does not feel specific to those kinds of scenes probably is pulled in from other sources.
Some very serious eyeliner on him too.
Yes. And the other guy too.
To the point that I couldn't quite tell if they were going for like, oh, this helps you be more concealed as a ninja.
I think it's just to kind of highlight around the eyes, since there's so much like dark clothing around them. It just kind of gives it a little more pop. But
again, as far as you know, the robot stuff is from this movie.
I think so. Yes. Again, because this is all kind of sketchy. It's all a little sketchy because, again, we don't actually know exactly how many movies are credited to Godfrey Ho. He doesn't even know because they recut and re-edited a bunch of his stuff into other things later on.
That's the sign of a business enterprise that is fully upstanding and above board.
It's the most mercenary thing I have maybe ever heard about in movies, and it's kind of amazing.
And I'm going to just assume that Richard Harrison did not get any kind of points or royalties for every time he was.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no. So Richie Harrison, American actor. But mostly made his name, what little name he had up to this point, working in European B-movies in the 60s and 70s. Because I think at one point he was a bodybuilder. And so they were just bringing in Americans to do, like, you know, Italian and other European films just to kind of look handsome on screen in, like, sword and sandals type stuff. So he was doing a fair amount of that. And he signed on to do, like I said, a handful of films in Hong Kong. And then this happened. And I couldn't find the specific interviews, but there's a lot of sources cited saying that Richard Harrison specifically blames his career falling apart because of this.
Oh.
It wasn't much of a career, to be fair. He was not well regarded as an actor. But basically, because these movies were so shitty, and he was so on the box for all of them, like, basically, he became inextricably linked to these garbage, like, ninja movies, and that's it.
Look, you know, When your whole selling point is off-brand Chuck Norris, I feel like the ceiling is pretty low to begin with.
He kind of looks like what I imagine Drew Scanlon will look like in 40 years if he like didn't use sunscreen.
Oh, I only have this black and white photo where he looks very dapper, like very striking.
He was a handsome guy. Don't get me wrong. Even in this movie, he's not. You know, he's still a handsome dude. They don't put him in the most flattering outfits, but you know, he's fine. But, Richard Harrison simply says, Godfrey Ho killed my career.
How about, was it Baron? Barry?
I have no idea who that actor is. I think he's in some of these other ones, but I don't know him personally.
Okay.
Before we get into it, can I ask about this version of the movie we're watching?
Yes.
Because, number one, it looks like it was lifted from a VHS tape.
It might have been.
Like, I am quite positive I see multiple instances of that telltale kind of VHS.
Warble.
Analog tracking. Distortion, tracking stuff. Also, what is with the cropping? Because, like, the titles themselves do not fit, like, the Ninja Terminator title at the beginning does not fit in the frame.
So, the short version of this is we watch the version that is on archive.org right now because, as far as I can tell, it is the only widescreen version of this movie available anywhere. The DVD release that is you can find for like, you know, a dollar and a song here in the US is full screen, and they do the thing where it's like half the shot and then they cut to the other half of the shot.
Oh, the pan and scan?
They do a lot of the pan and scan. And I have never found a DVD version of it that doesn't have that. I'm sure there's one out there. It's probably like German or something, but I've never found it. And that version also, like, there is no non-fucked up version of this movie that I've ever been able to find.
Man, we talk so much about film preservation and just true works of art are being lost every day.
So there was an extremely limited run, like 200 copies, Godfrey Ho collection that came out on Blu-ray, but it was all like, you know, like original, like the current scans of the movie. They didn't do anything new to them, but that no one has that. Like 200 people bought it and that's it. So I'll probably never find that.
Someday, if you have it, if we know somebody.
Yeah.
Did, while we're just talking about production stuff, I'll end this copy of the movie. I was going to bring this up maybe at the end, but at the very end of this cut of the movie, there is a promotion for this movie.
The trailer? Yeah.
Yeah, but before that, there is just the Star Wars music and
yes.
a fake Paramount, maybe, with the lady with the torch.
Uh-huh. But not so that is the Joseph Lai production, like that is their like banner.
Okay.
I mean,
and then just the Star Wars music.
Yeah, I was trying to save it, but my favorite moment of watching this entire movie is like 15 minutes in when like they play like about 10 seconds of Pink Floyd's Echoes out of fucking nowhere.
Yes.
Then use it a different part. I mean, that's like a 20 minute long song, but they mm-hmm. use a different part of the song later for a sex scene.
Oh, that sex scene.
And I am quite certain they did not pay to license that song.
Oh, my friend, they never paid for a song in any of these movies because they stole music all the time.
Great.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say just about every piece of music in this movie and just about every piece of music in all these ninja movies is 100% stolen and unlicensed.
Okay. Jeez. I mean, there's some good music. There's some like legitimately pretty rad music in this, and hearing that makes more sense because this music is absolutely punching above the weight of the budget of this thing.
Some of the things where music is stolen from include Miami Vice, Star Trek, Star Wars,
oh, wow.
The artist Wendy Carlos, Vangelis, Pink Floyd, Tangerine Dream, and a number of like city pop Japanese artists. The list just goes on and on. There's a bunch of like obscure prog rock on this soundtrack too that is again completely stolen. None of it is licensed. It is the wild fucking west out here.
I like the music at the beginning as the titles play.
Yes.
I'm way into it. It just sounds like 80s kung fu movie to me.
It was great, and I'm sure it was stolen from somebody. Now, the last thing I'm going to bring up here, again, I said that Godfrey Ho had made a great many ninja films. I'm not even sure the list I'm about to read off is complete, but I'm going to give you the ones that I have, and I'm going to try and read them all. As many as I can in a single breath, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I'm going to take a deep breath here.
Go.
The Blazing Ninja, Ninja in the Killing Fields, Ninja Project Daredevils, Challenge of the Ninja, Ninja Destroyer, Ninja Champion, Golden Ninja Warrior, Bionic Ninja, Ninja Fantasy, Ninja Thunderbolt, Ninja Hunt, Ninja Squad, Ninja the Protector, Tough Ninja the Shadow Warrior, The Ultimate Ninja, Clash of the Ninjas, Ninja Dragon, Ninja 8 Warriors of Fire, Ninja American Warrior, Ninja Phantom Heroes, Cobra vs. Ninja, Death Code Ninja, Ninja Operation License to Terminate, Ninja Avengers, Ninja Commandments, Ninja Death Squad, Ninja Kill, Ninja in Action, Ninja Silent Assassin, Golden Ninja Invasion, Ninja Knight Thunder Fox, Diamond Ninja Force, Ninja's Demons Massacre, Rage of the Ninja, Ninja the Battalion, Ninja's Extreme Weapons, Ninja Knight Brothers of Blood, Ninja Force of Assassins, Ninja Power Force, The Ninja Showdown, Ninja Strike Force, Ninja of the Magnificence, Knight of the Ninja, Zombie vs. Ninja, Full Metal Ninja!
Oh, Full Metal Ninja, that's my...
Okay, I think I took two breaths in that.
No, that was like four or five.
Is there a single title in there that does not include the word ninja?
No.
Okay.
And those, again, those are just the ninja movies. There's also
that
at least a couple
good.
Dozen with Kickboxer in them, so...
Now it's the Kickboxer. That was a good ninja... let's call it a ninja scroll.
Thank you.
Yeah,
but
yeah don't pass out.
Listen, not all these movies are exactly the same, but they're all kind of the same in the sense that they feature actors who are, let's just say, not Japanese, doing ninja shit. They are often completely incomprehensible, and they usually end on a complete non sequitur. You know, it's like guy shoots a rocket out of his wrist blade, and guy blows up, and the end title, like that kind of thing. And this movie totally has that too.
Is there a point where this catalog starts in earnest and runs into satire, or is it done not even that deep? We're just making movies as quickly as we can here.
I think it literally is just about volume and efficiency more than anything else. Like, they really kick these up in the early 80s, and it kind of goes into, I'm going to say, about 1990 or so before he kind of moves on to Kickboxer stuff and other cheap martial arts stuff. Though I will say, he did make a couple of B movies that aren't that bad, both of which star Cynthia Rothrock.
Nice.
That came out in the mid-90s. They're not great, but like Undefeatable is like all right by direct-to-video martial arts movie standards. It's okay.
And now back to Ninja Terminator, just quickly. The movie that has most of the really good martial arts in it,
yes,
with Jaguar, is not even his filmed movie?
No, not at all. Not
okay.
remotely.
The parts with Jaguar, are those the Korean film?
Yes. Everything with Jaguar and the guy in the blonde wig and all that stuff, that is all the Korean movie.
Jaguar Wong is a pretty fucking good name for
it
a
really
kung fu movie hero, I have to say.
Yeah. But so, the setup, such as it is that there is this ninja empire doing ninja shit.
What do they call it? I've got the subtitles in a file in front of me that I can at least control F on if necessary, or the subtitles don't quite work in this. What do they call the empire?
I think they just call it the ninja
empire.
That was
Ninja Empire.
I thought there was like a full name for it at some point, like Eternal Ninja Empire or something.
There's the
like
Golden
that.
Ninja Warrior.
Yeah.
Which is the icon of this ninja empire, which looks like something you would piece together on an episode of Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Our ninja empire is supreme, omnipotent, and righteous.
Damn right it is.
They're having their anniversary, right?
Yeah.
It's like
20 years. Celebrating 20 years of ninja
20
shit.
20 years. You know, a real deep anniversary for the ninja empire. 20 years.
Look, it took many years to consolidate the various ninja fiefdoms and pull them together. You know, like the Chinese empire wasn't built in a day.
Yeah.
Neither was the ninja empire.
Just like imagining a sign that's like Ninja Empire established 2003.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly.
Like, it's like, yeah, real, we got a real history here. This is our first golden idol, so I'm pretty...
You know, me and the other ninjas, we were just, we got together at Fuddruckers one night, and we were just thinking, you know, what if we form some kind of ninja empire?
Yeah. You know, it's not serious commitment, but you do have to worship me.
Yeah,
I am
it's
the supreme
cool.
leader of the ninja empire. I wear the red.
Supreme ninja. Supreme Ninja!
Yes. And so, the Golden Ninja Warrior, this really plastic statue that they have that fits into three pieces, presumably gives the person who unites it the ability to deflect blade weapons in the three specific parts of the body that are covered by the statue. The torso, the arms, and that's it. And our two white ninjas, Richard Harrison and the guy who, I don't know the name of the actor, it's Baron is the character. And this other guy, I think his name, it's Tamashii is his name?
I think so.
Tamashii is like the name of the guy they're trying to protect?
Yeah, he's the third ninja. So they are like kind of the top warriors in this thing. And they're like, this ninja empire is not so cool. We should break this thing up so they can't do the ninja shit anymore. And so they steal the three pieces of the Golden Ninja Warrior. They split to the different parts of Hong Kong, from what I can tell, the parts they could film in, and then proceed to sit around for a couple of years until the ninjas find them and decide to start killing them.
It was pretty unclear to me until maybe a quarter through what had happened in the beginning, because they just kind of, they're all standing there trying to chop this guy with swords, and then suddenly they're all running out of the building, being chased by other ninja.
Oh, no. They're not running out of the building. They're going...
they're scampering.
Doing their, like, little skitter walk as they go.
And an occasionally hard cut teleporting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ninja vanish!
So is the stuff... Because it's hard to tell because they're all, like, in, you know, black ninja outfits. Some of these, like, there's a lot of backflips.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. It's a lot of gymnastics.
I guess you have to give them some credit for as much as they just lifted most of the good fighting in this from another movie from a whole different country.
Mm-hmm.
Like they did at least do some legit looking action in the stuff they produced for this.
I mean, I think part of the reason they lifted that movie in particular is because it is shot and set in Hong Kong. And since they are setting all of this movie in Hong Kong, ostensibly, it's very easy to say, well, no, they're just over there doing that stuff while Richard Harrison's over here.
Well, I'm trying to think which parts, like, again, is Richard Harrison, is he a martial arts person? Is he doing his own stunts?
I'm going to say, other than a lot of posing and maybe a little bit of light sword work, Richard Harrison is not doing those backflips.
Okay. Because what I'm trying to scrub through the movie now and just see, like, could these shots be, because everybody's in cowls, it's so hard to tell.
Yeah, they all have face masks on. They only take them off to deliver their fucking amazing dialogue.
Yes. And it's mostly just tight shots of, like, you know, the guys running around from the chest up. But yeah, there's some like fun ninjas. It's very goofy, like hyper cartoonish stuff going on, like the teleporting, the backflips, the smoke coming out of the back of the hilt of the sword.
Oh yeah, you know? No, they're literally just pulling from a Mad Libs tablet of ninja stuff.
Yeah, yes, a lot of cartwheels,
and then inserting some other genuinely bizarre touches here and there.
But they do make it out of the compound.
Yeah, and they spread to, like I said, different parts of Hong Kong. And then when they decide to off the one actual Asian ninja of the trio, that is when the other movie comes crashing into this one.
I love the title, 2 years later, Hong Kong.
Yep.
So, I know there are going to be a lot of questions here, but that other, he's trying to perform the ritual on the center body piece, is attacked, but then tries to quickly perform the ritual. Is that how he gets killed?
I think that's the premise, is that he's trying to put the ninja shield on his torso, but he doesn't do it fast enough, which is why when he gets a ninja star in the back, he dies.
Okay. Ninja star is amazingly instantly lethal in this.
Uh-huh.
Considering it looks like it penetrated maybe an inch deep into his back, not even like the spine.
You could, oh my God, I just went and looked at it, watched it. You can see it bounce off of him.
Yeah. I believe it.
You can see it literally just fly to the left of him after he gets hit with it, even though it's supposed to have killed him.
Brad, what do you think they're going to use, real ninja stars? Come on, it's a movie. They
could have just digitally erased it, you know.
Yes, right. Yeah. Who killed him?
The Ninja Terminator.
And I am the Ninja Terminator.
Who else would have done it?
I don't know, you're right.
Okay, to be fair, they don't say the word Ninja Terminator until much later in the movie, and it is that guy saying it on, like, on the phone to another guy, and it's literally like, he's going on a big spiel. He's just kind of yelling about, you know, the ninja empire being betrayed and all this stuff. And then at the very end, he's like, I'm the Ninja Terminator. And then, like, even before he finishes his sentence, they cut to the next scene.
And I am the Ninja Terminator.
And so he's working for the ninja empire, but is he on his own?
He's the chief assassin, I guess, of the ninja empire, though you would be forgiven for not noticing that, because I don't think they ever actually say it.
Okay, but he hasn't defected on his own.
No.
Because you never see him like the boss man trying to get this thing back.
You know, I think for the rest of this, we should just take your questions as we go through it, because this is not a plot that really deserves recounting so much as just trying to clarify whatever the fuck is going on.
I guess I would say I gave up trying to make sense of the plot about 15, 20 minutes into it. I just sort of let it wash over me from there. I mean, the stuff that's obvious is obvious, but like, this movie kind of defies scrutiny, I think.
It does. And we will do our best to scrutinize that which defies scrutiny when we come back. We're going to take a quick break. See you in a minute. All right, we are back. Let's scrutinize the inscrutable. What do you guys want to know? What doesn't make sense to you? Oh, Vinny, I see you raising your hand there. What do you got?
Okay, so they kill the third ninja master.
Yes, the one that doesn't get any lines.
And then his brother and sister are from another movie?
Yes.
What?
Brother from another movie.
So, because the sister gets rescued by Jaguar, who's just in a different movie. So the brother and their sister are a different movie?
Yes, they're mourning someone completely different in that movie.
Ikaza, I don't know what. I don't know what we're going to do without Tamashii. It just doesn't seem fair. Why did God do this to us?
Hey. Machiko, my sister, don't worry. We'll always remember Tamashii as the wonderful person and brother that he was to us. May God rest his soul. But Machiko, I'm bothered. bothered by his death. It seems so strange. This whole thing is damn suspicious. Machiko, do you think our brother was hiding something? Something illegal that we didn't know about? Like drugs or smuggling or maybe even triad activity? I mean, why would anyone want to get rid of Tomashi and then get evidence to show that he was murdered? It just doesn't make any sense at all, does it? The police say that he was found with pieces of metal in his back. It definitely means somebody wanted him dead. It's so strange. Come, Machiko. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. But I have to find out what happened. For Tomashi's sake, and for the sake of our family. You understand?
You gotta give him
long
credit.
Yeah.
Their long, like, eulogy, this long scene over the another person from another movie?
Yes. And I don't even know who that is, because I've never seen that movie. I can't even find that shit online anywhere.
The sister's so upset.
Yeah. Somebody died. They're at a grave.
The brother's not really upset. The brother's kind of
confused.
Just like,
he's as confused as we are.
Yeah. He's confused. He doesn't even know who died either.
No.
Oh, man. That's wild. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Oh, you mean Machiko.
Yes. Machiko, who kind of gets it pretty rotten in this movie.
Yeah. She's just kind of a damsel through a lot of this, and also, like, just not well-treated.
So, she honestly has no idea what the golden idol is. She's kidnapped.
No, because when she's delivering her lines, there's nothing about a golden idol in there.
Because she doesn't know the brother, or I'm in the wrong movie.
No.
They keep asking me about this golden idol. Oh, that's amazing.
I think they did the math, and it's over 50% of this movie is the other movie.
Oh my gosh. Well, now it makes sense. Any scene with Jaguar, who's in a lot of it, the sister, yeah. Lily, all the fights that they're in must be the guy in the wig. They're all from that other movie.
Okay, so that I can't explain on any level, which is the bad guy with the wig. That whole thing is totally baffling to me, but it made such an impression that I'm pretty sure there's an It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia bit where Charlie Day dresses up as that guy.
Oh, I need to go look that up.
Yeah. But, dude, why is he wearing that wig?
Why
is he dressed like that?
I don't know.
Why is he wearing spats?
He works for Baron, though? Or
in the context of this film, he works for Baron, yes.
Right, the other not Harry ninja master.
Let me see if I can maybe connect a couple of things here. The thing you're supposed to divine from what little they give you here is that Richard Harrison, with his right arm of the Golden Ninja Warrior, has mostly retired to a life of being married to a woman 20 years younger than him and living in an apartment with a Garfield phone.
Who has a lot of trouble cooking crabs?
Yeah, there's a lot going on in that household. I can't even begin to pick it apart. But
how many crabs do you need?
Also, like, why are you scared of them? You're about to eat them. What are we doing here?
So many crabs. The crabs are loose. Anyway.
Don't worry. Thank God I got this fucking ninja pen or whatever you just threw at them.
Just sharpening my ninja throwing darts.
Baron, the other white guy ninja,
yeah,
is ostensibly part of some kind of criminal empire that he has founded in the wake of having the left arm of the Golden Ninja Warrior. And the guy in the blonde wig, according to the Frankenstein footage and how they edited it, is supposed to be working on his behalf.
Yes.
But the thing is, there's also the Ninja Empire, which is where the guy in the red shows up, the one who calls Richard Harrison on the Garfield phone, and talks about how you've betrayed the Supreme Ninja Empire. Why did you do that?
Listen to me. Traitor, I believe that you've received a death message from our Ninja Empire. Ninja is supreme and you have double-crossed it. Why did you do that?
The Ninja Empire is evil. I have to reform the Ninja Empire. That is why I took away the Golden Ninja Warrior.
You've got 3 days in which to return the Golden Ninja Warrior, or else you die.
Go to hell.
He kills the other guy, takes the body part back.
Yes.
And so none of these different parties know what the other one is trying to do until way late in the movie, when finally Baron and Richard Harrison kind of get together and are like, oh, well, you have each other's ninja stars. That's weird. But none of that makes any fucking sense.
And Baron, by way of the guy with the wig, by way of the guy who keeps losing fingers, is sending robots and VHS tapes
no,
to Harry.
That's the Golden Ninja Empire.
Oh, they send the VHS tapes.
Yes.
Wait, I thought when they kidnap Machiko, they send a VHS tape with them, like, trying to get the information out of her. And doesn't that come via robot? Doesn't that come via robot?
Yes. But also, okay. Here's the thing, is the first robot that shows up at Richard Harrison's place has the voice of the guy who is the Ninja Terminator.
Traitor, listen. You have just 3 days to return the Golden Ninja Warrior to our master. Hear and obey.
Uh-huh. Who then, as soon as that tape ends, he immediately calls him on the phone. Because he was like, hey, you got that message? You get that? We got my robot?
So maybe this is just how ninjas send messages to each other.
I'm not wholly unconvinced that three people kidnap Machiko at the same time.
Okay, that's fair.
She may be in three different places being kidnapped by different people.
I could believe it, too. I mean, she is in, like, three different movies at the same time. Okay. I think that helps a little bit. The people that kill the brother of Machiko work
That's the
for
Empire.
The Empire.
Because remember, they're the ones that have the torso later in the movie.
Well, why did they have to kill the brother?
Because he had the torso. Oh, why did they kill the other brother?
Yeah,
the one
yeah,
who was
yeah.
at the grave?
Sorry. Yeah, yeah. Who killed
Because that
in
was
the
already
car?
In the movie that they took the footage from, and they just had to figure out a way to retrofit it in there.
Mm-hmm. Is that Baron? Is he looking for the body at this point, and it thinks that Machiko and the brother have it?
I don't know.
Because this guy's in ski masks at that point. They're not even ninjas anymore.
Well, they're agents of somebody. Those are not the ninjas. Yeah, because they use like a sniper rifle, and that's not a very ninja way of going about things. That's not very ninja of you.
No. Okay. It's...
Brad, you have a stern look on your face. Like, you were just trying to hold all these things together.
I can't, man. It's...
Is there anything you would like to know?
Like, I've been sitting here looking at the footage, trying to answer that question, uh-huh. trying to answer the question of, do I have questions?
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Hearing the provenance of how this was made has kind of just makes me feel like I'm detached from the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, my favorite things in this movie are specific moments.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like, specific moments of dialogue and musical cues.
Give me a couple.
It's hard to find because without the subtitles here. I mean, this is later in the movie. I can tell you there's a point where a guy shows up in glasses
mm-hmm.
to fight Jaguar and basically says, like, you kidnapped my brother. I'm here to take revenge or whatever. And it's, like, the most ham-handed, dumbass-sounding line delivery I have ever heard.
I know the one you're talking about.
That ring you brought into my shop didn't belong to you. Huh? It belonged to my brother, and I'm here to take revenge now.
That was one of them. The Pink Floyd stuff that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
The Garfield phone.
The crabs.
Crabs, sure.
Everything with Richard Harrison's wife also feels like it's from a different movie, but it's not.
They also just wave an issue of Cosmopolitan around in front of the camera, and I'm quite sure they didn't have the rights for that either.
No, if there are rights that would have needed to be secured for anything, you can rest assured they never even made a phone call about it.
I do like when he slices the two things, the watermelon slicing.
Which he does twice.
Yes,
it's literally the same footage twice.
The second time in... Oh, is it the exact same footage?
It's the exact same footage twice. They're not going to film that two different times.
I that's like maybe the one point in the movie that I stopped and thought, like, I wonder how they did that. Because, like, the slices all stay for a second, and then they all fall apart at the same time. It's like, did they put them all on fishing line and pull them or something?
Probably, yes.
And then, is it Baron who's eating the watermelon, slicing up the watermelon?
Oh my god, I forgot about him eating. I've never seen a human being eat watermelon like that, ever.
Right, like that's
carving it up.
That's my impression of this movie, is just shit like that, like him eating the watermelon
with a knife and fork.
There's the point where does Jaguar run into? Jaguar has multiple encounters with Lily. I'm trying to think. It's not the one where he like kidnaps her, although actually him being ordered to kidnap her, and he's just like, sure, can do. Like,
yep, yeah. I'm on it.
Jaguar, this is Harry.
Hi, boss. What's happening?
Tamashii's sister was kidnapped. I want you to take revenge by kidnapping Lily. We can make the exchange later.
Okay, that's no problem.
But how can you be sure? I've just seen a video cassette of Machiko.
Okay, boss.
I'll get right onto it. These guys mean business.
But it's the point where he says something again. I wish I had the subtitles here. He says something about, like, you know, I need you to help me in my plan. And she's like, she's like, does your plan involve going to bed with me? And he's like,
yes.
He's like, well, that would be nice, but it's not integral.
There's no need to be rude. Just cooperate.
And I suppose being cooperative entails going to bed with you.
Perhaps, though I wouldn't say it was integral.
Yes, that is when he kidnaps her. When he beats the other guy, when he pretends to be a taxi driver, okay, and then takes off every part of his disguise, the mustache, the glasses, than the wig.
Yeah, like Lily is something of a femme fatale in as much as this movie can construct one, who is playing both sides of the other story that is not actually part of this movie, and is involved with the crime boss who keeps losing his fingers because he sucks too much.
Also, one of the, I don't know if it's the same, I think it's a different villain, one of the crime boss guys has like the most absurd sounding voice for a crime villain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just found a guy in accounting and got him to read some lines at some point.
This is Jaguar here. I've now got Lily with me. I'll release her on one condition.
What? What, you bastard?
There's a couple of like, meh, see? Mm-hmm. Like, we're gonna go get you, see? But that guy, the guy who is like Lily's would-be boyfriend, is also just kind of a doof.
There are at least a couple of voices in this that sound like they're being done by the South Park guys.
I think that's the guy I was trying to think of. The guy who is like Lily's current flame or whatever in the crime crew.
So there's a decent chance this movie was dubbed by the same people who did a lot of the dubs in the 70s and 80s in Hong Kong. I don't know if they specifically went to them or not, but there were only a handful of dubbing houses that were doing most of the Hong Kong shit of this era, and they were usually based in the UK. So there's a decent chance that some of the voices you're hearing this probably have been in like hundreds of other Hong Kong movies from around this time.
I kind of want to watch this original movie because I also want to know why. What's the deal with the bomb maker who comes?
Oh, yeah, they really throw that shit in out of nowhere.
Just comes completely out of nowhere.
Just like, oh, the bomb, you changed the order from remote to time. Why?
But also, I still have the remote and I could just press it, but then it's also on a timer.
It's on a timer. Also, we pulled this bait and switch with the, we'll just forget it. Just go.
As far as I can tell, that movie is nothing but a series of kidnappings on top of kidnappings on top of kidnappings, because all they do is kidnap people in that footage.
Yeah. It's like
Jaguar gets kidnapped, like various underlings get kidnapped. He stuffs one guy in a hotel closet.
Lily gets kidnapped. Machiko gets kidnapped. You're either kidnapped or dead. Also, Jaguar is like, it's like a James Bondish quality to it. Like, always laughing at the.
He says he works for Interpol.
He does say he worked for Interpol. Also, that part where he's being held hostage, and it's like a 15-minute scene of him getting his cigarette, and it's the wrong brand. And now, can you go in my bag and get me my brand of cigarettes? Sorry, could you light the cigarette for me? Sorry, could you lean closer?
Could you stand directly in front of the cigarette just for long enough for me to, I think, shoot a dart at you?
Tell me, can a dying man have a last wish?
Huh?
A cigarette?
I guess so. After all, it's unlikely that you'll contract lung cancer before I kill you.
A sensitive guy. I appreciate the concern you show for my health.
Don't bother.
No thanks. I really prefer my own brand. You'll find them in my bag. If it's not too much trouble for you.
Fussy, aren't you?
Hmm.
But just to show you how good-natured I am, I'll do it. See?
I'm sorry. My hands are tied. Do you think you could possibly light it for me and have one yourself?
Thanks.
I'd hate for you to remember me as a mean son of a bitch, so go ahead.
I don't usually smoke this brand, but I'll do it for you.
Is that what happened?
I think?
Wait, I thought it was like a poison cigarette or something.
Wait, I thought he kicked him in the nuts.
Wait, what?
Like below camera? Well, you can't see it, but I thought
it's
like below
camera. It's very telling
camera.
That we all have three very different interpretations of how that went down.
I thought he like took a drag and then he went to go light Jaguar's cigarette and just sort of like collapsed.
Well,
that's what it seemed like to me.
I thought he shot something out of the cigarette that was in his mouth at the other guy and that's what knocked him down.
I thought they just had a kick under the table that you just didn't see because the guy goes a little like cross-eyed.
It's possible that all interpretations are technically correct.
It didn't make any. I watched it three times. It still didn't make any sense. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah,
still doesn't make any sense.
I will say
there is
also
he lights the cigarette. He takes a drag.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He goes to light Jaguar's cigarette. He tries to light the lighter a couple of times. Okay, I see what you're talking about. There's a flinch.
Yes.
I took that flinch to just mean like whatever he poisoned the cigarette with, like just suddenly took hold of him or something.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I really don't know.
I don't think any of us can truly discern what happened there.
It's very the whole thing's very long, though.
Yeah, I mean, they had to fill a lot of time. This movie's like 87 minutes long.
Yeah, this movie is not long. Like the I'm trying to think like how to refer to these. There's sort of the rapper movie of the ninja stuff they shot, and then there's the sort of movie contained inside it, which
and
is
there's,
this Korean film. Like
there's
that
also,
film.
Sorry, just real quick. There's also a tiny bit of another ninja movie in there when there's another videotape that I think they give to the melon-eating guy where he's like, you know, the ninjas who betray must,
yes.
you know, commit harakiri. I think is just VHS footage from another Godfrey Ho movie.
I completely forgot about that because I remember seeing the lady who kills herself on there and I was just like, am I supposed to know who this is?
Yeah.
Betray the ninja code.
Anyway, the Korean film seems like it might be all right.
Yeah.
I don't think it's particularly well regarded, but the martial arts scenes from that made it into this are by far and away the best choreographed parts of it.
Yes, that's mainly what it is. Like the fighting, again, there are quite a few moves that very clearly don't connect. But other than that, like there's definitely a good crisp quality to a lot of these moves.
Like 90% of the fights that appear in this movie that were shot for this movie. Are like 5 seconds long, and they mostly just involve a guy doing a backflip and then ninja vanish into smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
It is not until the very end that you get anything even closely resembling an actual extended ninja fight outside of that very first couple of minutes where they kill a bunch of nobody ninjas when they're stealing the Golden Ninja Warrior.
Like, honestly, my most lasting impression of this movie, though, and I had this feeling a little bit watching some of the other Hong Kong stuff earlier, but this especially is, like, it gives so much more context to the video games that I was playing around this time, late 80s, early 90s, like, watching some of these fights from the Korean film, especially the sound effects. I don't know if they kept the sound effects of the original or if they had to dub those into for this to reuse the
They were all pulling from the same sound libraries, so I mean, even if they did redub it, they probably just used similar effects.
Like, just so many games that I can think of feel like they just would not exist if it were not for stuff like this. Like, the sound effects, the style of the roundhouses and, like, double kicks that they're doing. I mean, this is from what they shot for this movie, but there is a shot of Richard Harrison who, like, it looks like the basis for the Revenge of Shinobi title screen.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're throwing stars at each other.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not when it embeds in the sword, but he like deflects one with the blade once.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Like that, it literally feels like they just copied that shot for that title screen.
Well,
like there's just so much imagery in these movies that feels like it was funneling directly into like a bunch of shitty beat 'em ups in the back of the bowling alley around this time.
Totally. You're 100% right. Like this is some bad dudes ass shit. But the other thing I will say real quick is that what is very likely the case is that not only did that video game take that shot from a movie, but this movie also probably took that shot from another movie.
Oh, sure.
They are just copying other ninja shit that they saw around this time.
Yeah. I don't mean that this particular work of art is especially seminal, but mm-hmm. more just if this is, you know, if this is indicative of the type of stuff that was happening around this time.
So, like, the basic thrust of, like, I'm going to say 70% of this movie's runtime is Jaguar runs around doing errands for Richard Harrison's character, disembodied, you know, character who, he, again, the actor has no idea that this is what his footage is being used for. Running errands for him, trying to track down, you know, the other pieces of the Golden Ninja Warrior, figure out what happened to Machiko and all that. And then every once in a while, they'll just cut back to Richard Harrison doing something or his wife doing something for like 3 minutes, and then he's gone again for another 20. Like, it is an endless procession of Jaguar just fighting random dudes and them trying to invent context for why he's fighting those dudes.
There are a lot of fighting between Jaguar and 3 to 5 dudes in this movie.
Yeah.
A lot of Garfield phone, a lot of sitting on the couch just...
Before I even had ever seen this movie, I had seen GIFs of Richard Harrison talking on the Garfield phone shared around, and that is what eventually led me to finally track this movie down and watch it.
Nice.
It is one of the most baffling creative choices I have ever seen in a film, and no baffling creative choice has maybe ever benefited the notoriety of a film more than this one.
I mean, when you don't have to pay any licensing fees, you use the Garfield phone.
Yeah.
Maybe they got it off that beach in France where they keep washing up.
Yeah. I forgot about that beach.
I was not exactly on board with this movie, and I think until I saw the Garfield phone, and I was like, okay, this is stupid enough that there's something here.
And then the toy robot really sealed it for you, right?
Yeah.
With the death message.
Yeah, I know we're kind of all over the place here. Yeah. I'm just sort of jumping in on something. There's another moment I loved that I'm remembering now that I see it. The Ninja Terminator kind of breaks into Richard Harrison's place.
Yes.
And then he comes home just in a normal like dress shirt.
Yes.
And then realizes that there's somebody there.
Uh-huh.
And that whole quick little scene of like the Ninja Terminator like thinking he's around the corner and jumping out with a sword and he's not, but then he immediately appears in his camouflage.
Yes.
Ninja get up. Like he had about 5 seconds to change into that. It's just more stupid ninja mysticism stuff.
Totally.
Like he went from mustache and dress shirt to full ninja outfit, like, in about 3 seconds.
Oh, yeah, it's Superman shit. Like, it is literally like Clark Kent going to Superman, but he's a ninja.
One of my favorite scenes in this movie is, and now that we're kind of talking about the mechanics.
Let's just bop around wherever. I don't care.
The mechanics of maybe having to stretch or fill gaps in this movie between Jaguar beating up people. It's the scene where it's Richard Harrison's wife as a fashion designer, just like, which is doing an extended scene where we're talking about this year's fashion and the pleats and bathing suits. And
we got this pretty lady to be in this movie. We might as well just have her do something, right, other than just scream about crabs.
All our orders are full this year, but the market is changing fast, so we must prepare and be ready for it next year.
Well, look, our designers are creating multi-purpose swimsuits.
Oh. Very good idea, but we should put stress on both outdoor and indoor use. I think swimsuits are also very suitable for aerobic exercise and sport.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That style's nice, but it could use more pleats. Ah. I think the trousers should be in pink.
I'm not so sure. With the white pants, it's more elegant.
Uh-huh.
Oh, by the way, I've arranged a meeting with our designers for this evening.
Oh, okay.
No, not this evening. She's going to be busy.
Huh?
But so also, we don't even know what kind of dialogue those actors are delivering, right? Like even the ones who appeared in scenes that were shot for this movie, it doesn't seem like the lip movements even come close to matching the dialogue in some cases. Did they just have them say, like, whatever?
So some of the Richard Harrison lines do line up, but it does still sound very... I mean, everything is dubbed. Everything is dubbed in this. So whether it's him or another actor dubbing it, like, I think some of the lines line up, but with her, you're right, almost none of them do. So I imagine at some point they just decided to rewrite all her dialogue for whatever reason.
Sure.
But yeah, she's like a fashion designer, and there's a whole scene, like Vinny said, where she's just looking at sketches in a book, and it goes on for like minutes.
I think bathing suits are appropriate for indoor. We should focus
they're
on that.
They're great activewear.
Yeah, they're amazing.
You know, these pants could use more pleats.
And the relationship with the wife is maybe one of the greatest mysteries of this movie, because later on he gets a videotape of Machiko tortured, and they're just sitting on the couch watching
it. What is this movie you're making me watch? Yeah. I feel like that's what happens every time you and your wife sit down to watch a movie that I made you watch, and that is the exact response the two of you are having on the couch.
Except my wife will ask, what is this movie we're watching? And not just assume that, like, is this a work thing? Honey, are we watching it? Is this a work thing? Is somebody kidnapped again? Are you still a ninja? But are you still a ninja master?
Okay, you want me to really bake your noodle here? Think about the mechanics of this. They are watching footage from the movie they stole footage from on a VHS tape.
Uh-huh.
So they are just watching that movie as if that is what is happening in their movie.
Oh, man. That is, yes, you're right. You're right. We've crossed planes.
Their proof of life tape is literally just something they rented on VHS.
It is for a proof of life tape with editing in it and different shots and reverse angles.
Yes, that's something else I remember is just, yes, there are actually like four cameras in that room or something getting these close-ups of henchmen every so often.
Yeah,
yes.
Some, like, POV shots from like Machiko's point of view of like of them coming swinging. He just gets back on the Garfield phone while the wife is just kind of like staring at him, be like,
"Look, that's the work phone.
It's the ninja phone.
What are we gonna do about this?"
Like hearing now how this was assembled makes the editing make more sense, because there is some very severe editing in this.
Oh yeah,
like the cuts from scene to scene is just like there are parts where like I've never seen less space for dialogue to breathe from one scene to the next, And now we know that may have actually been out of necessity in some cases. Like, they had to cut there because they didn't have anything else to work with.
But there's also weird things where, like, whenever they do... this one didn't seem as necessary. Whenever they do phone conversations, they wait to cut to the other character before the person continues their line. They'll be like, "Hello, Brad, I'm calling." And then the shot will change to tell you they kidnapped Machiko, you know, and it's just like, what? You don't have, you could stitch that all together, man.
Is that not how you talk on the phone?
I do wait until the audience can see you before I continue talking,
It does give the whole thing a certain vibe, though.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just the speed that it moves from thing to thing, even though that may have just been because this thing is a cobbled together Frankenstein's monster, but, like, it still gives it a unique kind of feel.
Well, that's, you're right. And that's kind of what I enjoy about these. I mean, I've certainly not seen all of them, but I've seen, I don't know, maybe a half dozen of these Godfrey Ho movies over the years, and they're all kind of some version of this. It is that heightened thing, and also that ability, like, you can feel him in the room being like, we can't linger on anything too long, because, like, the second anyone starts thinking about this, they're gonna walk out of, not that these movies are probably playing in theaters very much, but they're done with this. So, like, we just have to jangle different keys in front of the audience as much as possible to make sure that they are never aware of what is actually happening here.
I have to assume this is a situation where all of these movies were making just enough money barely to justify their existence because they were so cheap to make in the first place.
Oh, yeah. And again, the amount of money they were spending on the footage that they were actually making for these films was just a pittance.
Oh, yeah. They're all in the... now that you've kind of dissected some of the movie, you see that they're all in the same set constantly.
Yeah.
I mean,
and they're not getting good actors by any stretch. Like, Richard Harrison is by far the biggest name they get for any of this line of films. And again, he only shot enough footage, you know, they say three movies, but I mean, in this case, that could be like one and a half movies of actual footage.
Right.
And then repurposed it a bunch of different ways. And so it's just like, between that and using footage from movies you've already have the international distribution rights for, they are spending almost nothing, even compared to the Hong Kong cinema of this era, which, you know, you could spend like $1 million US making one of those good action movies from that time. This stuff probably cost tens of thousands of dollars to make at most.
Right. You're stealing all your music.
Yeah.
You're shooting for, like, I don't know, a month with these actors.
If that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a fair amount of stuff I wanted to give this movie credit for coming in here and then finding out how it was actually made. I'm, like, kind of disappointed in the movie now.
Because,
like, I mean, kind of. Well, like the music stuff in particular, like the briefcase swap scene has got the most amazing cheesy Peter Gunn knockoff music going behind it. I was like, all right, like, fuck yeah.
Oh,
and then finding out they probably just stole that from somewhere else. Like, oh man, come on.
What is that? Why is he? Why were they exchanging for drugs?
Because that was what happened in that movie.
I love that there's some kind of heroin thing going on for about 5 seconds of this movie, just because they have to make some footage make sense.
And then later on, the dub is just like, "We want the stuff. You're gonna bring the stuff." Where's the money for the stuff?
Well, I guarantee you that is the entire reason they fabricated this backstory of Baron being a crime lord, is because they had to explain away why there's all this drug deal shit and other stuff going on in the background.
Where's the stuff? Also, Jaguar, there's like every time he's talking to Harry, which again makes sense now, he's on the phone, right?
Right.
Does he have like a phone koozie? Does he have like a...
Kind of looks like it.
Is there like a thing, like a little like dress... There's like a little.
There's something going on there, a little sleeve or something. I'm not sure.
On phones, is that a thing I don't know about? Maybe in Hong Kong, maybe because phones are they're dirty or something. The germs can spread, and I just don't know. It's very cute. It's adorable.
It is.
Yeah.
But like with the Jaguar stuff, you can tell in that movie that he's actually in.
Yes.
There's an ongoing bit about him being, you know, like a Bruce Lee type, like a dude who is like an ultimate, you know, like Jaguar style master or whatever it actually is in that movie versus what they name it here. And so you see this escalation of him like fighting all these different thugs and bad guys of different degrees of skill. And they're all like, you know, mostly no match for him. But then you get to toward the end here, once he, I guess, rescues Machiko, but they don't show that part because I guess they didn't have the footage to actually show him rescuing her. And then he fights the big bad. Presumably there was stuff in that movie that explains that this guy is supposed to be some kind of ultimate badass final boss character, but they don't bother even trying to establish any of that in this movie. So instead, what you get is this guy take off his fucking blonde wig and his jacket, and just suddenly he starts doing some Mr. Heavyfoot shit. And like, I don't know what his style is. I don't know what his deal is, but he keeps getting further and further stuck in the sand.
Yeah. Is it the shoes? I don't know. Like, they do these like tight shots of his shoes as he's like, and you're just waiting for him to get stuck in the sand. It takes so long.
It happens like 4 times, and it just keeps getting deeper and deeper each time.
I love that dude's intro.
Yes.
Number one, I don't know what he was doing with that wig, but his real hair is pretty fucking rude.
Yeah.
But more of the point, and this is, I guess this is more on the original Korean movie than the makers of this movie, although how they cut that footage together might have something to do with it. Like, he starts doing moves, or he like kind of kicks his jacket out of the way and gets ready to fight, and then the camera just pans over to these waves crashing on the rocks for no reason. And then all of a sudden, the sea is incredibly rough around them as they're fighting this fight, which, like, I mean, good on them for waiting until the sea. You know, it's a great backdrop for this fight, having these huge waves crashing behind them, but it's just, like, so contrived.
But there is fun choreography in this fight.
Like, yes, there is.
And they're going at it, and it is fun to watch, except for, again, the anticipation that he's going to get caught in the sand, because it takes forever.
Yes. I feel, and this is just my interpretation, I feel like in that movie, probably the thing is that he has really powerful legs and kicks. Like, that seems to be the way they're portraying his style. A lot of his kick, but he's always very permanently planted on the ground when he's doing his kicks and his moves.
Yeah, there's like pans down to his feet.
Yeah,
I think multiple times.
So like, there's maybe some sort of weight or balance thing that he's doing that is making his style work, and then maybe the sand is what kind of starts throwing that off over time. But again, this movie does not even care about that shit at all. It is really just about getting you to that fight and repurposing that footage so that you can see a cool fight before the ninjas have theirs.
Yeah, it's amazing how much time, or how much, I guess I should say, how much of this fight they use here. Mm-hmm. considering there's a whole other ass fight coming right after this.
And also, again, because that character, the dude in the blonde wig, is so poorly established by necessity, because, again, what they're doing here. But I don't know what that guy's motivations are in any of this, other than I guess he works for Baron. His criminal empire is question mark. Like, he's just crime guy who is mad at Jaguar, and okay, I guess we're having this fight.
Uh-huh.
But it is, you're right, it is probably the best choreographed fight in this version of this movie.
Also, he dies real well. He's got a real, like, slow, like, just fall over and waist deep in the sand.
It's kind of a Ric Flair flop. You know, it's that kind of just sort of like, I'm walking two steps and then I fall face plant forward.
Yeah, a little blood trickling out of his mouth. There's also an instance of what I guess I can only describe as slow motion during this fight right there, where he's like beating on him while he's stuck in the sand, of like, they basically just kind of freeze frame it every so often.
Ugh. Yeah.
And that reminds me of when they did that when...
the bomb?
It was somewhere around the bomb.
It's the bomb. It's during the defusal part.
Is it while they're defusing it, I think, is when they do it? And yes. I guess, like, again, now knowing how this was made, like, oh, that's the only way they could get any kind of slow motion out of this.
Yes.
I just, like, pause the footage every 2 seconds.
Thought my playback was messing up.
I totally thought the file was glitching out when they
also had that exact same feeling.
It's, it's not great.
Not a pleasant slow motion effect.
No. I mean, look, pleasant is not really a thing this movie deals in by and large.
Well, like, you know, I laughed a good few times.
But this is a real grimy production in just about every sense of the word. It's not sleazy, but it is grimy.
Like I said, I think the fights are fun to watch. And then this last ninja fight where it's all the ninja stuff.
Yeah. Here is the thing that we put on the title of the box. Finally, here's your ninjas. Here's your ninja slop, you fucking pigs.
Where they all just break out their golden painted Ninja Turtle statue, whatever they have.
Yes. So we skipped over one of my favorite really stupid details in this movie, which is the first time we see Richard Harrison wield a sai. It's a switch sai.
Yes.
Why would you make that? What is the purpose of that?
I just had to take that one in stride. I was like, okay, I guess they make those. I guess this is just something I didn't know about.
Uh-huh.
I feel like what it actually is like a prop sai that kind of goes in the way like a prop knife would, but they decided, what if it was like a switch sai?
Uh-huh. Like I'm having the same thought as I see Richard Harrison unsheath his sword in this last fight.
Yeah.
In his dumb camo getup, but like, is that blade made out of plastic?
It's indeterminate. They are definitely not wielding real swords when they are doing the actual sword fighting.
Like, yeah, I should also mention, like, another interesting aspect of watching this is that this version of the movie feels like it's about a fourth generation copy already.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it looks like it came off of VHS at some point. So, like, it's legitimately hard to discern some details in this because it's so degenerated.
Yeah.
There's a part near the watermelon montage where I guess it's Baron or somebody doing, or maybe it's Harry.
Oh, the guy doing the hippie fire dance.
Yeah, but you can't really see anything.
Just the fire. That's it.
The flames.
He's literally
around.
Wearing a jet black ninja outfit in a dark beach.
Yeah.
Yes, it's hard to tell who people even are in some spots. I'd swear these swords are plastic.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But it's fast, and it's like a fun. It's fun to watch. A lot of backflips,
like,
and
yeah, like people are able to flip, like they're and jump, and like there's at least actual choreography here. I don't know if the fighting is as good as the Korean movie.
Like there's sure as shit any like Core UN shit. Like it's not that it ain't even up to that muster at all. But like, do they manage to squeeze a somewhat coherent ninja fight out of two Anglo actors and another guy and none of the, and they're stunt performers?
Yeah.
It's okay.
Like, and with like just fun ninja stuff, like the vanishing and coming back, like reverse footage of people like landing on mountains and,
Yeah, they all get to use their signature colored smoke bombs here.
Yes.
Like Richard Harrison throws a green smoke bomb and then the Ninja Terminator throws a red smoke bomb back. Uh-huh.
Yep. It's.
And Baron has one too.
Yeah. And Baron...
That's my smoke bomb.
I mean, look, Baron's barely a character in this movie. They have that one shitty little face-off in the middle of the movie where it's like, you have my ninja star. Well, you have my ninja star. What's the deal with that? But other than him eating that melon and occasionally staring, like, kind of in a weird, sweaty, kind of creepy way toward the camera, he doesn't do anything in this movie until the end. And then he just kind of dies.
You know, some of those tight shots of his eyes kind of remind me those, like, side glances he does, like, when they do,
black
like,
eyes,
tight...
lifeless eyes, like a doll's eyes.
It reminds me of a, it's a Christopher Lambert from Mortal Kombat. It's like,
oh,
side
yeah.
glance. He's got, like, that kind of just, like...
Mortal Kombat.
Yes, yeah. There's, like, this, like, weird staring.
He's the only one that dies by a weapon that is... just pure ninja shit, which is the elbow claw.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And, like, you don't even see his face, really.
Yeah.
Like, he gets almost no death scene. Like, you kind of see his face as he gets stuck with the things, but then he just falls away, and that's, like, the whole death scene.
Yeah. And then there's...
For the guy that's supposed to be a pretty major character here, he just kind of vanishes from the movie.
Major character in this context really doesn't mean anything, I think. And... I mean, it's like 30 seconds after this that the movie just ends.
Right, like, and what even happens to the Ninja Terminator?
All right, kill me.
Your death will serve no purpose.
I've lost faith. I can never return to the Ninja Empire.
I went back and, like, I literally slow-mo'd through that explosion several times, trying to figure out, like, is that supposed to be him exploding?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But there's nothing there. I mean, granted, it happens fast enough you can't really see.
There's like a little clump that falls, isn't there? Like a little.
I mean, if you frame by frame into that past that cut, there's literally nothing there. There's no body, no nothing there.
No, they didn't have time to put a mannequin together. Like that's money, man.
There's just an explosion, and you're meant to just assume the guy was there blowing up or something.
He's
I mean,
humiliated.
Again, this is a staple of at least the ones of these that I've watched. Is that a guy blowing up and then the end is a thing that I have seen elsewhere in this lineage of films, is what I will say.
Glorious trash.
And Master Harry here, he's got the whole statue, right?
Yeah. That dude's invulnerable from the waist up.
I do love that was the last shot where he's like trying to pick that thing up without dropping all the pieces.
Because they're not fitting together at all.
Yeah. But like, yeah, he's the Golden Ninja Master. No, the Empire's still out there. This guy who's had the pieces.
I think he is the Ninja Empire now. I'm not sure.
Okay. Nobody knows. I need to get a gif of that thing blowing up and saying the end for when I'm done with a thread.
I guess. They've only been around for like 22 years, so I don't know what like their line of succession is. Like, maybe they haven't had to deal with this before.
Or maybe they'll be back. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean...
The Ninja Empire Strikes Back. That's a thing they definitely would have titled one of these movies if it came out around the mid-80s.
They've got the music already.
Yeah.
They stole that music already.
George Lucas, he's on board. Let's do it. Oh my gosh.
What a fun, dumb movie.
I'm glad you said that because I was really worried this was going to be the one that broke you guys.
I'd say it's like tied with one or two others on the what the fuck have you gotten us into scale.
I'm going to guess right now those are Houssou and Captain America.
It was, yes, I actually, House was the one I was thinking of, but I had forgotten blissfully about Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
Captain America, still the worst movie we've seen.
Worse than this?
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
This was kind of fun. Well, this had fun
stuff
in it.
This is more fun. Yeah, there are more fun moments in this, for sure.
I mean, the one thing you can say about Captain America is that half of that movie isn't taken from a different Captain America.
That's fair. If you're going on the credits of what has the
most actual footage? I feel like it does win that battle.
But if we took out all of the Jaguar stuff from this movie, I still think the ninja stuff was kind of fun in this. I did like them with their like, we're going to blink people out and stuff. I'm putting this above Captain America, but below Street Fighter because I do have some taste here.
Captain America
was pretty bad, but this, there's kind of a moxie with it. I think like you said of like just
chutzpah. Yeah.
Yeah, like I can't believe you're just going to put this out there and go for this and then get some microphones and a dub house to basically rewrite it all to kind of string it all together into some cohesive narrative. I think when we were doing this podcast, realizing the part that broke my brain was realizing the sister was not mourning the guy who just died, mm-hmm. and that would put this above Captain America.
And the brother
for me
was not asking about any of the things that he was asking about.
Nope. And that's fantastic. Like,
yeah.
People should have gotten paid. Rights holder should have gotten paid. Mm-hmm. Actors should have gotten paid.
I shouldn't speak out of turn. I didn't follow up on this. I thought I saw like some headline going around about like modern Marvel production. There are becoming instances where the actors are not entirely sure what product it is they're there shooting footage for.
Oh, really?
At this point, with so many crossovers and tie-in TV shows and stuff like that, and like maybe Godfrey Ho was just 40 years ahead of his time.
At the vanguard of fucking over actors, yes, 100%. Because they were also doing a thing, I think, where a lot of the day player actors on those Marvel things, like the people that were just like background actors, were basically getting their bodies scanned without them realizing it and being inserted into other movies that they were not being paid for.
Great.
We were all worried about AI when it was Godfrey Ho.
Godfrey Ho, as an addendum here, still with us, teaching film in Hong Kong.
Great.
A whole new generation of filmmakers are going to learn from this man how to do it right.
Perfect.
Do you know somebody who has a deeper catalog? Name them.
Not at this level of quality.
Yeah. Would you say over 150?
I think that's the estimate. Again, okay. He doesn't even know exactly how many are credited to him.
Oh my God, he has other movies, such as 1988's Robo Vampire.
Yes, I have seen Robo Vampire.
Holy shit. The art for this is just RoboCop.
Yes.
It's just RoboCop.
It is.
But it's like an original piece. It's not like they stole it. It's like this is like a painted proper movie poster with a full fucking knockoff RoboCop.
Yes, RoboCop has a fucking Chinese vampire in a headlock in this.
Man.
Right. That's the RoboCop 3 we should have gotten.
All right, what if this podcast is now just a dissection of the full catalog of Godfrey Ho?
Listen, I am down to bring back some more Godfrey Ho the next time we do one of these bad movie months. I will watch as many of these as you are willing to watch.
Well, let's table that one for now.
Okay, yeah, we'll put him off to the side for the time being, but Godfrey's always there waiting for us.
But the robot in Robo Vampire doesn't look like that.
That's not important, Vinny.
If you look up whatever Robo
Vampire... You know
Vampire
what puts butts in seats, Vinny?
RoboCop.
Did you just watch this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, maybe. Anyway. Robo Vampire looks much cooler.
Here's the thing. This is by far the grimiest, most fucked up one of these that we are going to watch for this month. Brad, you're broken again. What's happening?
I'm sorry. I don't know if you're on the same blog post, same WordPress page I'm on where you found that Robo Vampire art at the bottom. He must have made a movie called Lethal Panther 2,
mm-hmm.
but they misspelled Panther on the on this like promotional art for the movie. Panather.
Perfect. No notes.
Ship it.
Well, as yes. I said,
yes.
The remainder of our films for this month are definitely not at this level of Mercenary. I'm again not here to tell you these are good movies or movies that make any sense, especially because this next one I still haven't seen yet. This is going to be a new one even for me. But they are movies that are entirely assembled out of their own footage. That much I can guarantee to you.
Can you guarantee it?
I can't guarantee they're assembled out of their own audio all the time, but they are definitely assembled out of their own footage.
Okay.
And next week, we are going back to New York, baby.
Okay.
1980s New York by way of 2021's New York Ninja.
2021.
The first time New York Ninja was ever released was in 2021, technically, so it is not wrong. It was filmed in the 80s. It was never completed. No audio was recorded for it. And somehow, some way, which I will dig into before we do our podcast next week, the folks at Vinegar Syndrome got a hold of it, edited the footage they had, recorded audio for everything, and then put it out for the very first time.
Okay. That's an exciting collaboration.
I have no idea what to expect, other than people I know who are into these sorts of things tell me it is a riot. So I am looking forward, just like you guys, to seeing what the hell's going on with this thing.
Oh, Cynthia Rothrock is in it.
Yes. Cynthia made the rounds.
So was Ginger Lynn Allen.
Huh.
I don't think I recognize anybody else.
Okay. Yeah, I'm wondering if it's more they did the voices after the fact as opposed to being in the movie.
Oh, okay. It's hard to tell from this list, cast list I'm looking at if they're like physically in the movie or just voice.
Okay, I'm looking at this on, yeah, it's voices.
Okay. I thought you meant it was starred like people who were active in the 80s and then...
No, nobody you know is in this movie as an actor.
Okay.
But so they actually, Vinegar Syndrome actually has a little bit of a relationship with Cynthia Rothrock because they've put out a few of her movies on their label. So getting her to do this actually makes a certain amount of sense. But I have no idea if this movie itself will make any sense, but we're going to find out together. I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too.
Ninjas, guys. They're still cool.
You know, I love them.
They're still real to me, damn it.
According to Wikipedia,
they're real.
Ninja exists.
Yeah, they're out real. There. Forming an empire.
I found a chart. Wikipedia had a chart of like which domain in the Edo period had how many ninjas. Apparently in the Kishiwada domain had roughly 50 ninjas, while the Kishu domain had 200 plus.
Ooh, that's a lot of ninja to keep track of.
200 plus ninjas.
Man. Kishu has just been generating ninja assets over and over and over again.
They're reusing some.
All right, well, that is going to wrap it here on Ninja Terminator. As always, thank you, Brad. Thank you, Vinny.
Thank you.
And thank you to everyone at home who is still listening and watching along with us. We'll see you next time.
And I'm the Ninja Terminator.